That is some of the final movement of the String Quartet No. 2 by Leos Janacek, nicknamed Intimate Letters from 1928. A recording by the Pacifica Quartet from their CD called Declarations, Music Between the Wars. Also has music by Ruth Crawford Seeger and Paul Hindemith on it. Pacifica Quartet are cellist, put it in the usual order, violinists Sibi Bernhardsson and Simin Ganatra, actually usually the other way around, first and second, Simin and Sibi, violist Masumi Per-Rostad, and cellist Brandon Vamos. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and coming up in just a few minutes, I'll be talking, I'll be talking with violist Masumi Rostad of Pacifica. They're coming to the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana Thursday night for a concert with pianist Menachem Pressler. Pacifica were until recently the string quartet in residence at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. They are now the quartet in residence at Indiana University in Bloomington at the Jacobs School of Music there. And then later on in the hour, we'll have a live performance by local singer-songwriter Margaret O'Brien. Her instrument of choice is, unusually, the mountain dulcimer. She is one of the 80-plus performers who will be at the 4th Annual Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival Friday and Saturday in Urbana, and her performance will be Saturday evening at 7 o'clock. We're featuring several performers from the festival on the first portion of our week here on Live and Local. But we will start with Masumi Rostad of the Pacifica Quartet. It's now sort of a homecoming for them since they've been here, of course, through this last spring and are in their first semester at Indiana University. And Masumi, welcome back to the program.
Well, it's my pleasure, and we miss all of you, so it's nice to talk.
So I know this is a new gig for you still, a couple of months worth. And I'm just kind of curious about some of the obvious differences that you find at Indiana versus Illinois. How are things different for you there?
Well, let's see. I don't know anybody. That's a big difference.
Except the pianist with whom you'll be performing at Krannert on Thursday.
That's right, with Menachem Pressler. It's actually a little bit of a smaller town, and yet the music school is mammoth. I mean, it's a huge music school, so it's just a different sense of proportion.
So, just out of curiosity, because I don't really know the answer to this, how many more students have they got than Illinois School of Music?
I think they've got something at Indiana. There's something like 1,600 students. It's really one of the largest music schools in
the
world.
And that's what, 500, 600, 700 at U of I.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. So what does that mean for you and the other members of the quartet? Does that mean you carry a larger student load, or are there just that many more private teachers available there so you have a similar load?
We've been brought in to kind of create a culture of chamber music and really just redesign the chamber music focus at Indiana. So we put together the groups, and we've got something like 33 string quartets.
Wow.
Which is just mind-boggling. So on every other Tuesday, we've got this assembly of students, and it's way over 100 kids in the room, and it's kind of overwhelming trying to learn everybody's name, but it's also very exciting. So
are you not really doing any private teaching?
Oh yeah, we are. So it's a mix of chamber music and private instruction. So,
well, you're going to be collaborating on this recital Thursday night with, as you mentioned, Menachem Pressler, long-time piano faculty member at Indiana University, but also the pianist of the Beaux-Arts Trio for nearly 55 years. I should know this and I don't know this. Are they still going on?
No, they're not.
So they have retired as an entity, but he has not retired by any means as a performer. But 89 years old, something like that. Have you had the chance to collaborate with him before in
recital?
Yeah,
well, we've been playing with Malcolm for maybe 6 years or so in just various festivals and concert series. And he's just a major inspiration to us. He's, as you said, he's 89 years old, and he makes us feel like we're extraordinarily lazy. I mean, we'll see him in Tokyo. We saw him in Tokyo recently. We saw him in London, and you know, when we find him on the road, you know, he rattles off his schedule, and it's like, oh my gosh, how do you keep that up?
Yours pales, huh?
What's that?
Yours seems to pale in comparison.
Yeah, I mean, it's really incredible, but it keeps him going. It's his lifeblood, making music, and the rehearsal process with him is so fascinating because a lot of people that you collaborate with sometimes are prone to phoning it in, and he just, I don't know. I mean, he every time we rehearse with him, he's exploring the music so deeply, and he's never settled on an interpretation, which is really wonderful, and it's been a great inspiration to us because it has changed our rehearsal process as a result of working with him. But he's always looking for a better way to do it, a deeper understanding of the music, which, you know, you'd think somebody who's been playing this repertoire for, you know, 70 years or whatever, it would have like a way to do it. But every time we play with him, he's changing. And that's just really fascinating to witness and to experience.
So how has that changed your rehearsal process? What was it before and what is it now? And is that change only when you work with him or when you work on your own quartets?
No, I think it's changed us permanently. And it's I think he serves as a constant reminder to never settle. To never settle in musically, which sometimes, you know, if you're playing the same piece over and over and over again, you know, you can kind of say, well, this is how we do it, and that's maybe a comfortable way to just, you know, stop probing. But if you do that, it essentially the music dies, and it's not like. It's not necessarily that you're getting a better interpretation ultimately, but you are getting a deeper understanding of the music, and you're getting a deeper connection with the music. Every time you explore it, you're going that much further into the music. Does that make sense?
It does. You've talked with me before about the rehearsal process and the amount of rehearsal that Pacifica Quartet does, which is an enormous amount of rehearsal. And you're known, the quartet is, for, among other things, extreme virtuosity and incredibly tight ensemble, which of course comes as a result of that rehearsal. And I wonder how you do find the balance between rehearsing extensively so that you can get everything right and together and in tune exactly and a conception very tightly unified, and yet have enough freedom to continue to explore, whether it's in the course of a performance or in the next performance.
Right. Well, what we're essentially doing in rehearsal is rehearsing for flexibility. So rather than saying we're going to take, you know, this retardando is going to have a half-life of, you know, like this many beats per second or something, you know, kind of defining exactly how much time you're going to take and, you know, how you're exactly going to do every, you know, cadence or transition. Rather, what we're trying to do is say, okay, this person needs to be free enough to do what they need to do, what they want to do, and we understand that at this point, we're going to look at this person and give them that flexibility, or we're going to balance this chord in this direction. But it's a process of allowing ourselves to have freedom. And that's actually a very difficult thing to do. So I think what a lot of students do is they're rehearsing for, you know, a fixed ideological one way to do it and hope that works in the concert regardless of hall, of the different space or whatever. And what we've learned how to do over time is to rehearse for flexibility.
And then when you're when you're rehearsing and performing with Mr. Pressler, is that process heightened even further, where you have to be even more acutely aware that, let's say, he might do something different than you did in rehearsal?
Oh, well, I mean, he'll always do something a little bit differently. and that's part of what's exciting about playing with him. I think as a pianist who has been part of an ensemble with strings for so many years, he gets inside the string sound like no other pianist I've ever played with. It's something about his balancing or voicing where he just gets inside your sound.
What does that mean?
It's very often, you know, that you have strings and then there's a pianist, you know. And sometimes, you know, you can get really close to playing together and getting a really similar sound world. But with Pressler, it's like he's inside your head and inside your string instrument.
That sounds a little creepy.
Pardon?
That sounds a little creepy.
Yeah. It's a little creepy, but it's a very visceral experience. he definitely gets in your business, which is really, really wonderful, actually.
Is he at all intimidating to work with? I mean, just because of his vast experience?
Yes.
Really?
Absolutely. He's absolutely intimidating to work with, but that's great.
Intimidating, but not necessarily scary.
No, not scary, but he definitely will question everything that you do, which is, I think, the point.
So, having gone to Indiana University now, does it feel at all like you've gone back to school? at least if you're going to work with him regularly.
I think for everybody who plays with him, it's like you've gone back to school.
But you come out a better performer as a result of it.
Yes, I mean, this is part of one of the, you know, the as a professional musician, we have a lot of hubris as string players and instrumentalists because we stop our formal education after college. But if you look at singers, for example, they always have coaches, and they always have somebody who's checking them out. I think it's nice to have a colleague who is questioning you and encouraging you to take it a step further.
Violist Masumi Rostad of the Pacifica Quartet, who are coming to the Krannert Center for a homecoming of sorts Thursday evening at 7:30 with pianist Menachem Pressler. They're now at Indiana University, having been string quartet in residence here at the University of Illinois. And I thought before we have a little more of my conversation with Masumi, we'd hear, since we've been talking about him so much, pianist Menachem Pressler. There's no recording yet with Pacifica and Pressler. However, we do have another piano quintet, a quintet for piano and strings, this one by Robert Schumann, Menachem Pressler, the pianist, with the Emerson String Quartet. Here's a bit of the opening movement. Back to the opening material from the opening movement of the Quintet for Piano and Strings by Robert Schumann, the Emerson String Quartet with pianist Menachem Pressler. That latter gentleman will join the Pacifica Quartet for the piano quintet by Johannes Brahms on Thursday evening at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. You're listening to Live and Local. Our program today is made possible by The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. And I'll share a little bit more of my conversation with Masumi Rostad of the Pacifica Quartet, having to do with one of the other pieces that will be on their program on Thursday. The program's changed a couple of times, but it has always contained the Brahms, and it has always contained a string quartet in E-flat by Luigi Boccherini. And had this question from Masumi regarding that piece. Is his music some that you play with regularity or not?
No, not at all. I've been lobbying for the quartet to play Boccherini since I joined. I've got a fascination with Boccherini. I think he's really an excellent composer that's completely underrated. And this is the first time, actually, that this is the first season that we're playing Boccherini. So I'm very happy about it. He's an Italian-born composer who spent most of his career in Spain, and he was a virtuoso cellist. So actually the cello part tends to have a lot of flashy, very high-position bravura to it. But it's really wonderfully charming music and very creative. I really like the directions that he takes you in, the unexpected directions. So
remind me, is he roughly contemporary with Haydn and Mozart?
Yeah, he is a contemporary of Haydn, and they were both familiar with each other's work. There was actually a term that they, or a name that they gave Boccherini, which was Haydn's wife.
Meaning and, what exactly?
I think now we would construe that as maybe perhaps a little derogatory, but it was meant in the most endearing of ways, that they were kind of companions musically. I think that's what people were trying to say, that he was, that Boccherini complimented Haydn.
Masumi Rostad of the Pacifica Quartet. We always post our interviews, not always on the same day, but eventually to our website, and I will include actually more of our conversation than we have had time to air on today's program. Our web address is will.illinois.edu. Live and Local is right in the front page. You just go to My Smiling Face, click on that link, and you can find all of our programs that we've aired over the almost coming up on 4 years that we've been doing the show. I should say not in exactly all of them. We didn't start for the first few months, but nonetheless, we will put this interview and the part you didn't get to hear on the website. Coming up, I'll be hearing and talking with, live in our studio, singer-songwriter and mountain dulcimer player Margaret O'Brien. Also on the Pacifica Quartet program, besides the Boccherini and Brahms music, is this is the part that has changed a few times, the second of Sergei Prokofiev's string quartets, which you can actually hear in recording with Pacifica Quartet as part of their complete cycle of the Dmitri Shostakovich string quartets that is an ongoing program. And what's interesting about each set that they record and release is there are quartets by Shostakovich and then one quartet by one of Shostakovich's contemporaries. And the Prokofiev is on second volume of the series. You can check that out. On that same volume is the string quartet number 2 by Shostakovich, from which this waltz comes. It's Pacifica Quartet here on Live and Local. That's a waltz from the second string quartet by Dmitri Shostakovich, played by the Pacifica Quartet, from their cycle of the complete quartets by Shostakovich. It's ongoing. Their latest installment, they just finished recording and is due out sometime probably in the next few months or so. You can certainly go to their website anytime and look for when that might come out. There's two installments so far, I think only the two so far, and they'll be at the Kranert Center in Urbana Thursday evening at 7:30. Tonight at 7 o'clock on the WYL-FM Evening Concert, it's the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Trevor Pinnock leads the orchestra from one of the pianos in Mozart's Concerto for Three Pianos. Also on the program, Beethoven's Triple Concerto and Mendelssohn's Scottish Symphony. It's the Chicago Symphony Orchestra tonight at 7 o'clock on the Evening Concert here on FM 90.9. Our program today is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, a Norrison preferred dealer at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. Starting on Friday and continuing through Saturday, it'll be the fourth annual Folk and Roots Festival in Champaign-Urbana, actually happening in downtown Urbana. And among the 80-plus performers and artists of various kinds will be singer-songwriter Margaret O'Brien, who is local to our area, although not, I don't think, originally so. She has an interesting instrument with which she accompanies herself. Usually you expect a singer-songwriter to have a guitar or maybe a piano, and she has a mountain dulcimer that she is sitting with right on her lap. She's in our studio right now, here in Studio F, to be precise, here on Live and Local, and has consented to come in and share some of her songs with us. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Why the mountain dulcimer?
Well, I needed something. I played tenor recorder for years, but you can't sing and play recorder at the same time.
That would be tricky.
And I have, my fingers are not real strong. I have arthritis, so playing a guitar was just not very easy. I don't know how either, but when I found the mountain dulcimer, it's, you push down on it instead of the angle you have to play to play a guitar, and it was just so much easier, and I just fell in love with it, and it feels like an extension of my arm now. I love it.
And how long ago was that?
About 7 years ago.
Oh, so this is a pretty recent development still.
Yeah.
Where did you come from? I said you're not from around here originally.
Southside of Chicago in the Beverly neighborhood.
And when and where did you end up in Champaign-Urbana? Via lots of other places.
Yeah, I went to U of I and got my chemical engineering degree. But about 12 years ago, I was up in the Wheaton area taking a medical leave from my job and helping to care for my mom. And after she passed away, I decided I couldn't afford to live up there, so I moved down here because I have a brother who lives here and his wife and two daughters. So it just seemed like the right place to go to. And about 7 years ago, I moved out to Monticello. I actually live right across the road from Ellerton Park, so it's a paradise.
I didn't know anybody lived across the road from there. I guess
I do. I hike in the woods every day. It's wonderful. I love it.
You don't get eaten alive by the mosquitoes?
No. Well, no.
I always have this horrible memory of the place. I mean, I've been there many times and enjoyed myself, but I have this one horrible memory of taking one of the long walks in the woods and being covered by mosquitoes by the time. But that's got nothing to do with it. I just can't ever get that memory out of my head. But you've been singing always?
Yeah. My family plays. I come from a family of eight kids, and at least half of us all play and sing, mostly guitars. My brothers play guitars and sing, and whenever we get together, that's what we end up doing, is somebody brings out the guitar and starts playing something. And I didn't really sing until maybe college, when I would have been in college in my early 20s, because I didn't feel confident enough to do it. But I would go and visit my brother Peter down at Western, and he was always playing with friends, you know, sitting around the living room playing music. And slowly but surely, I started singing in addition to playing my recorder. And it's just sort of blossomed from there. The more I perform, the more confident I get, and the more fun it is, and I love it.
Are you performing now more than you ever have?
Yeah. I haven't played out a lot because I have chronic fatigue, so I can't do a lot of it. But I played a concert with my niece Lynn that she did all the arranging and had a wonderful audience for. And I played Todd Darnell here in town, sets up the singer-songwriter collective shows. So I did a show with John Kappas and myself.
That's at the Clark Bar.
Yeah.
In Champaign.
Yeah, it's great. There's a lot of wonderful singer-songwriters out there. So, and I'm going to play at the Folk Festival. I'm very excited about that. And I'm going to do another singer-songwriter show on November 27th, another Tuesday.
So you're coming into your own.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somewhat later in life. I don't know how far in life you are, but later than the average person picks up, starts playing out, as you say.
Time is relative. You're still here, so you might as well do something you love to do. So,
well, let's hear first sample of it for today.
All right. This song is called "What Am I to Do?"
Oh, you have a precious look on your face just now. You were so involved in the song, and all of a sudden you just thought, is that okay? That's what that look seemed to say. Did I do okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, that was beautiful. Margaret O'Brien.
Thank you.
Your own song, I assume. Do you exclusively your own songs?
Yes.
Yeah. And has that lasted as long as you're performing out, or have you been writing songs for a lot longer than that?
I've been writing songs since 1998. first song I ever wrote was right after my dad passed away, and I was just missing him so much that the song poured out of me, and it's been uphill or downhill. It's history ever since.
So that's why you know the date so immediately.
Right.
Yeah. It sounded almost, maybe that's just the nature of this particular song, but it sounded almost conversational. I mean, you were talking about, if mm-hmm. I thought you'd answer, then I might have this conversation with you.
Yeah.
Is the song sort of inspired in that sense, or do a lot of your songs tend to be that way?
Some of them are. I mean, everyone is different, and I don't seem to be able to fit into any one genre. I mean, I like folk songs. I like that one was kind of a jazzy feel. I like to do folk blues on it as well. And I play by ear, so it's whatever chords my fingers can reach is what I play. And it's a diatonic instrument, so you don't have all the half steps everywhere. But I have a capo on it, which really allows you to do some interesting things that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do.
So just for the terminologically impaired, diatonic means essentially the basic notes of
like
a major
scale. Like do, re, mi, fa, so, the whole steps, right?
Or a minor scale, maybe.
Chromatic, like a guitar, it has every half step in between, so you can virtually do any chord you want.
Yeah, is it 13 or 12 notes? 13 notes. In a scale. I should remember. I haven't counted them up in a long time. Eight notes of a basic major or minor, and then all the half steps in between. There's a nice description of you on the Folk and Roots Festival website, and one of the nice things about it is that it talks about these folks who you have admired and I assume mm-hmm. consider as influences.
Mm-hmm. Very much.
The one that I probably know the least about, other than her name, is Mother Maybelle Carter.
Oh,
it seems
yeah.
like that should be said as Mother Maybelle Carter.
It's the Appalachian. She made the auto harp very popular. But that plaintive mountain sound just reaches into my heart. So there's some songs that I kind of combine that with maybe a little blues, like a folk blues sound to it. But I just love her because it's just pure from the heart, that simple and pure from the heart, those songs.
Well, that's what struck me about the couple of songs I was able to hear of yours before today that made me want to have you on the program. Joni Mitchell, you mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
The song you just did sounded like it could have been Joni Mitchell somewhere in the back of your head.
I'm dating myself, but she's one of my heroes. And you know, when Blue came out, when her first album, she played Mountain Dulcimer on it. But at the time, I didn't really even know what a Mountain Dulcimer was, and I didn't pay attention to it. So now that I'm playing it, I was like, oh my goodness, all this time. And she's like the master of tuning it whatever way she wants to and coming up with very complex fingering. And she's not like anybody else in the way she plays her instruments.
Are all mountain dulcimers diatonic, or do some of them have a chromatic scale?
Well, some have. I have one flat, and some people have two, and you can actually, something I would like to do someday is get a movable fret that you have to be able to drill holes in your neck, and then you move this with little pegs, and you can move the fret around so that you could virtually construct a chord that you wanted to do without getting every single half step put on there permanently. So there are mostly they don't have all the. There are some out there that have all the steps on them, but
that's not the one you happen to
not common
to
yeah.
buy, and you yeah. and you happen to buy it in a kind of a. It sounds like almost like an impulsive impulsive move.
Well, I was thinking, all right, I can't play guitar. Maybe I'll play auto harp. So I went to the Gebhard Woods Dulcimer Festival about 7 years ago.
Where is that?
It's up. Gebhard Woods is up by the Calumet River. If you take I-57 up and then cross over to 80 by Morris, Illinois, every summer they've had this dulcimer festival, and it's just wonderful if you just want to listen to great musicians or take workshops. It's really neat. So I went there intending to meet this auto harp lady, and then I found the Blue Lion Dulcimer folks were selling their dulcimers there, and I just fell in love with it, and they were such nice people that shortly afterwards I ordered my own first dulcimer.
So somebody must have done a nice demonstration for you.
Yeah. Well, the ease at which you can play it, and it's simpler for me to figure out than a guitar would have been. So it was so easy to play pressing down. I could do it. And I'd never played a string before, so this was a thrill.
Yeah, going from recorder to this would be quite a difference. It was interesting to me that you included among the people who you liked, in this case for humor and stories, Jim Post, who I just talked with last week.
I love Jim. He's like a legend in our family. We're always singing his songs. He's great. I used to go see him at the Earl of Old Town on Sundays. He
in
would
Chicago.
Do a kids show. Yeah, before I was even 18. The drinking age was 18 at the time. But when I was still in high school, I'd go up there and go to see Jim Post.
How did you happen to get to see him on Sunday? He was at the Champaign Public Library.
I really wanted
to. Or was
it
the Urbana Library?
Champaign Library. He did readings from his Mark Twain play, his one-man play.
And some songs, I presume, he must have done. Some.
I think there's songs built into it, not his typical songs, but songs that are part of the story of Mark Twain.
I would have liked to have gotten there and then couldn't. I'm just curious to know how he was, but he didn't
get
there
either. I heard he was great. I'm sure he was.
Oh, you did? Okay, good. Well, he was fun to talk to. He's a bit of a stream of consciousness speaker, I found. But I always liked hearing him when I lived in Chicago. I didn't ever hear him live, but as I said on that program, heard him on the radio a lot.
On
this one program we air now. Well, anyway, let's hear a little bit more from you. What would you like to do next?
All right, this song is called Lillian, and it's a story song, and it's based on when I was living in Wheaton. Just down the street from me was an elderly lady. Her name wasn't Lillian, but I changed it for the song. And she would, if I'd be out in the yard, she'd be walking down the street every day, and she'd wave at everybody. She took a walk every day. She had to be in her 80s, I don't know, but we became friends. And then I started walking with her, and we would just chat, and sometimes I'd go to her house, and we'd chat some more. And she's just a sweet, sweet lady, so I wrote this song about her. Everything is fodder for writing a song.
Of course. Well, that's if you better be careful. If you run into a singer, a songwriter, you could show up in a song, and you just hope that somebody will be as nice as you are to change the name to protect the innocent or the guilty.
My friend Lillian lives next door. She is 85 years old. Her husband Arthur died years ago. That's his picture on the wall. She takes a walk most every morning, waves to me along the way. Only stays inside if it's storming, puts an X on the calendar every day. Oh, Lillian, there's something about you that helps me understand my mother's ways. Oh, there's something about you that makes me want to listen to the things you say. She raised her sons on the south side of Chicago in a cold water flat. When Arthur went to war, it was mighty tough, till the day that he came back. The times they made a person strong, and many were courageous. If you ask them to tell it now, helps me understand my mother's ways. Oh, Lillian, there's something about you that makes me want to listen to the things you
Margaret O'Brien with her Mountain of Dulcimer here in our studio on Live and Local on FM 90.9. She'll be performing Saturday at 7 o'clock for just a 45-minute show at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana as part of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival, which actually starts on Friday. Technically, they list an event also on Thursday. The group that we've actually had on this show, I think, last year during the Folk and Roots Festival, a group called Resonation Station. They're playing at the Krannert Center's Uncorked series Thursday at 5 o'clock until about 7 o'clock. But the official festival starts at 5:30, or at least sales open at 5:30 on Friday. I see there is an event at 5 o'clock at the Iron Post. There's a sing-along. At 5:30, there's a Balron workshop, which is the Irish drum, a group called Almost A Quartet. I can't even mention all these because there are so many to mention.
Yeah.
I mean, on their website, they say there's 80-plus performers of some kind or another, including storytellers, by the way. It's mostly music. But there's also workshops going on. They have, I'm just looking here, for example, a Triad tent.
Mm-hmm.
With something called Dale Evans Musical Menagerie. That's intriguing. I have no idea what that means. There's a dance triad. There's some shape note singing that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a dance one of the nights, a square dance on Saturday night. Lots and lots of things going on. I'll be talking with a member of one of the groups that's going to be playing on Saturday called the Tequila Mockingbird Orchestra. They're out of British Columbia. And I'll be airing that on tomorrow's program. And also then we'll be having a conversation with Gina Forsyth, who's another singer, who will be performing at the festival. Check out their website, which is folkandroots.org. It's got the full schedule. Tells you how to get a wristband, which is what you need to get into all of the non-free events. There are many things that are free. You can just wander around and to the various venues. The venues are Independent Media Center, Iron Post, Heartland Gallery, Bouvons, the Rose Bowl, and I guess the Iron Post Patio. They're calling sort of a separate venue. The Community Center for the Arts. There's some things going on there as well. Margaret will be, I guess I said, at Heartland Gallery Saturday night at 7 o'clock. Eight kids in your family.
Yeah.
I'm part of a family of five kids. I thought that was a lot. And you said you all did music of some kind or another?
I would say half of us did.
Oh, just half?
And well, five out of eight. Okay.
Well, that's pretty good. Did they show up in your songs sometimes? I mean, you made reference to your mother.
Yes, I did. I'm not playing them. I wrote a song for my dad. I wrote a song for my mom. I wrote a song about the woods. We grew up in Beverly, just up the street from the Dan Ryan Woods, so I wrote a song about that. They make their way in.
Well, you said you wrote a song for, but they also show up in songs that maybe aren't necessarily for them?
Not specifically. I haven't. That's a good idea, though.
I'm surprised you hadn't thought of that. You said you meet somebody that could show up in your song. How many songs have you got already? Have you counted?
Probably about 100. They're not all good. I mean, the ones
nobody's,
I wrote at the beginning.
Nobody's songs
some of
are
them
all
are really good.
Good
in the beginning, like Dad's Song, and another one I'm going to do at the Heartland Gallery. But yeah, I'd say about 100.
Do you tend to, on the occasions when you have played out, as you called it, do you tend to share some of the stories about the songs?
I mean, yeah.
You did with us just now.
Yeah. It's fun because sometimes they just pop out of your head and they're done. I don't understand the songwriting process, the creative process. Sometimes you have to work at them, and sometimes something will inspire you, a story, and the song will come out as though it's already been written. And it changes very little after that first laying down of it.
Do you ever find yourself editing?
Oh, yeah.
You know, after you've done a song and thought it was done, sing it once and then...
I'm notorious for that.
Oh, yeah?
I'll take songs I wrote years ago and think, oh, there's a nugget of something good in there, but it's got to change because it doesn't feel right with where I'm at now and what I like to play. So I'll just take it. And you have to be brutal. You have to be willing to change it, rip it to shreds. If it's no good, throw it out. Otherwise, work with it until it's something you really love to sing and play.
And I assume there are some that you have done and said, that's enough of that.
Yep.
And either I don't like it anymore, it doesn't mean anything to me anymore, or...
Yep.
Or
they were just stupid.
Do you ever have some that become too painful to sing because they were too personal for some reason?
Well, not personal to me, but there is one song that I wrote for a women's group called Women for Women that were on Oprah in 2005, and they brought these women on the show from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And they told their stories of how they'd been brutally raped, just so sad, and it's still happening to this day. And what I remember from it was that the humanity was gone from their faces. They just felt so hopeless and desperate, and they wanted people to know their story. So I started crying, and I think I cried for 2 days, and then this song poured out of me that I thought, I'm going to do this song, I'm going to make a video of it, and somehow I'm going to raise money for Women for Women so they can help them, because it's a great grassroots group. And I've recorded it. I haven't made a video yet. I did just get to play it at a conference up at Northeastern Illinois University on art in response to violence. That this is the perfect spot. And they were wonderful. They loved it. So I might have met somebody there that can help me get a video done.
So that would probably be one that's difficult to do too often, I imagine.
Right. Well, it's not the kind of song you just... you know, play it a typical game. It's, you know, it's really painful. People don't, you know, you got to have the right frame of mind and the right audience and the right time to play a song like that.
Well, I want to make sure we have time to hear one more because the time has already escaped. And what should that be?
This one's going to be, it's a song about getting stuck inside in the winter, kind of cabin fever, and it's called My Father's Daughter. And hopefully it has a little bit of that mountain sound and a little bit of blues feel to it. Pipes are freezing cause they're wrapped in 1940s newspapers. Radiators clanking and the air inside is so dry. There's ice on the windowsill and cold air leaking through the door. I don't know about you, but I'm getting too old for this anymore. I gotta get out of this house even if it's cold outside. Gotta get out of this house, even if it's cold outside. I'm gonna put on my new hat, baby. Gonna head down to the waterfront. Gonna put on my new hat, baby. Gonna sit down at the waterfront. We can watch the moon rise over the water. You can hold my hand like I was my father's daughter. We can watch the moon rise over the water. You can hold my hand like I was my father's daughter. Said we'd move somewhere warm, grow tomatoes when we saved enough to buy a farm. First thing my toes touch in the morning is a cold, cold floor. I don't know about you, but I'm getting too old for this anymore. I gotta get out of this house, even if it's cold outside. Gotta get out of this house, even if it's cold outside. I'm gonna put on my new hat, baby. Gonna head down to the waterfront. Gonna put on my new hat, baby. Gonna sit down at the waterfront. We can watch the moon rise over the water. You can hold my hand like I was my father's daughter. We can watch the moon rise over the water. You can hold my hand like I was my father's daughter. We could go on vacation to sunny California. They've got earthquakes there, but at least it's warm. We're out of coffee, so we better pull up our boots and go to the store. I don't know about you, but I'm getting too old for this anymore. I gotta get out of this house, even if it's cold outside. Gotta get out of this house, even if it's cold outside. I'm gonna put on my new hat, baby. Gonna head down to the waterfront. Gonna put on my new hat, baby. Gonna sit down at the waterfront. We can watch the moon rise over the water. You can hold my hand like I was my father's daughter. We can watch the moon rise over the water. You can hold my hand. You can hold my hand. You can hold my hand like I was my father's daughter.
Margaret O'Brien, live on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. You can hear her performing Saturday at 7 o'clock at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana, part of the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival, which runs Friday and Saturday in Urbana. For more information, go to folkandroots.org and for the complete schedule. Margaret, thanks very much for joining us on the show. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. It was fun.
Our program today is made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign for over 25 years, providing income to artisans in more than 30 developing countries by marketing their handicrafts and telling their stories in North America. This is 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR and classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'm Kevin Kelly for Live and Local. Stay tuned next for All Things Considered from NPR.